We've been covering the historic and ghost town of Jerome, Arizona, nicknamed the wickedest town in the West. And we have a special guest today, author, entrepreneur, and coffee shop owner, professional woodworker, and I call him the furniture doctor as well, and former resident of Jerome, Arizona, Jim Schooley. This is Dan. I'm your host, history enthusiast, ghost town adventurer, and storyteller. And I have special guest Jim Schooley with us today. Jim, hello. How are you doing?
Good. Doing fine.
Glad to have you here. And Jim, let's go ahead and just get started the old-fashioned way. We're just going to start by introducing yourself. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Provide us a little bit of background on your journey and expertise.
Well, I think you pretty well covered it as far as, you know, I've got a theater background and woodworking. I've been a woodworker pretty much all my life. Antique restoration is my focus. But, you know, wooden toys was an early love of mine that took me to Jerome, Arizona. I had been looking for places where I could spend more time building and selling toys. And, you know, Jerome has a lot of tourism. And it seemed like a perfect fit. It was a town full of artists and creative types, colorful people, shall we say. It was a tail end of the hippie generation, and it caught my interest because it seemed to have everything that I wanted. It was in the Southwest, which meant that the weather was going to be a lot more pleasant, and it was on a mountaintop in the desert with all kinds of amazing places to visit. You know, there's, you know, tons and tons of open territory around Jerome, and it's 5,000 feet up, and you can't say enough good things about Jerome, Arizona.
I've heard a lot of good things about Jerome. I've not been there personally. I'm looking forward to getting in there, maybe even getting some video when I go down there as well. But so you brought up an important point. You said you moved down to Jerome. It was beautiful weather down there. Where did you originally come from?
Well, I was originally, I was born in Sioux City, and then, you know, we moved to Spencer, and then I moved to Omaha after school. I went there for work and other things. I established myself as a cabinet maker and, among other things, you know, actor. But, you know, I was just looking for something a little more unique. I was having kids and been recently married. And I thought, man, wouldn't it be nice to get out of the rat race?
Right.
You know.
And the cold race.
Well, you know, as a person that grew up in the middle of the, you know, the blizzard zone, you kind of look for places where they don't know what snow shovels are, and that was Jerome, Arizona, for sure. We hardly ever got very much snow, but what it would melt right away.
And much cooler than, like, around Phoenix, Arizona, and so forth.
Well, yeah, 5,500 feet up, you know, you're probably 4,000 feet above it. The climate there is you couldn't ask for a better climate. Air's very clear. You get monsoons in the summer on a regular basis, and not a lot of rainfall, but...
Well, real quick, just so people might hear a little background noise, is that I'd say the cool part about doing this podcast with you, Jim. So Jim is a coffee house owner, and we're sitting in his coffee house on a very busy road behind us. So sometimes you might hear a truck or some cars go by, but I kind of like the authentic feel of it. You know, it's like very real. So here we are. So if you hear a little bit of background noise, we'll try to get that control. But so you brought up something, and I'm going to let you tell your story more, Jim. One of the cool things that I learned about Jerome was there was this Renaissance period that happened, right? So we're talking about Jerome because this is Midwest ghost town. We cover it as a ghost town. But what happened was, is this Renaissance where artists started to come to the area. And guess what? You were one of them. So
one of them.
You were, and you are. So tell me about that period of time. That was when in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jerome became noticed when they started doing a hill climb, and it involved sports cars, MGs and the like, and there was this competition. You know, you would start at the bottom of the hill and race to the top, and then through timing mechanisms, and they would find out who had done the hill climb in the fastest time. It's full of switchbacks. I'm not aware of any terrible crashes, but there were relatively famous people that like to go to Jerome and race, and of course their entourage would include colorful characters.
Of course.
Their children or what have you, or friends. Word was that, you know, with $600 in some cases you could buy a house in Jerome. Well, you know, Say No More, the hippies just started filling in.
Were you one of those?
Yeah, I'd say you could. You know, I had a wife and kids, and that made me a little bit unique in some ways. You know, we actually visited church and stuff, and so we weren't the perfect example of the type of person or group of people that, you know, would shack up together in Jerome and make cool art together. But, you know, you could go in any store in any direction in that town and bump into artists and art studios and galleries and beautiful work of every type. Good restaurants, great coffee. And, you know, this shop is reminiscent of, you know, what I loved about places like the Old Market in Omaha and Jerome, Arizona. And, you know, you take something that has its own mystique and build on it. People in Jerome did, famously. They attract 1 million cars a year.
Yeah, tourism is big there. And, you know, this kind of leads into a couple of my next things that I want to kind of get into. Jerome has actually two nicknames, actually. I kind of stick with one of them. There was a New York newspaper that labeled Jerome the wickedest town in the West. San Francisco newspaper got a hold of that, and they couldn't be outdone. And so what do they call it? They called it the wickedest town in America, right? And it's like, what? So this was intriguing to me because I looked in the history. I'm like, what does that mean? Why is it so wicked in Jerome?
You know, sometimes reporters like to, you know, sensationalize their stories.
Well, this wasn't sensationalism. This was basically just pointing out the fact that Jerome, speaking in like the 1800s, was a mining town.
Yep.
And it wasn't just any mining town. It was a wild one, right? It reached anywhere from 400 to up to 15,000 at its peak, right? Didn't stay there. Mines closed down, they left, so forth. But one of the things that came in with being a wild town, there's more saloons than churches. I heard that and I was like, well, that doesn't surprise me. The miners got to do something. But another thing they had to do was the sex trade came in hard with the sex business. So there was brothels all over the place, right?
Well, you know, the idea when you're a mining corporation is you want to maximize your male effort. And that means you want to hire single men. I don't know about the wickedest town in the West. I think that at one point, Jerome may have had a killing a day. I've seen other ghost towns that possibly were worse. But because you have 15,000 people, 90% of which are single men, there's going to be brawling and everything that, you know, you can imagine.
Think of the Wild West, right? Shootouts and so forth. I mean, that was all part of it.
There wasn't a lot of law. When Jerome was first discovered to have copper ore, it meant that, you know, these miners were of a different sort. They weren't finding any gold, but they were finding something, and they amalgamated. Phelps Dodge bought them out. 88 miles of tunnels. They opened up an open pit mine, and they brought in bigger trains. They started out with narrow gauge, and they were doing everything they could to get all the copper out of there as fast as they could, and that meant bringing a lot of single men. And they designed their homes. Phelps Dodge built a lot of homes that were little four squares with four rooms, a porch in the front, a porch in the back. But if you're spending all of your free time in the bar, you're either sleeping, working, or drinking.
And one of the things that caught my attention, you know, when you hear a nickname of Husband's Alley, you're like, Husband, mm-hmm. Husband's Alley, what's that? And of course, that is where, you know, most of those brothels were. The main one, of course, you know, that was there. Big name, Nora Butter Brown was a big name. And
the House of Joy.
Yes. And so you hear these stories and you're like, okay, all right. Well, so here's something else that kind of came with this. So I'm thinking, man, the wickedest town in the West. And then, you know, the oldest ghost town in America. This is all kind of being marketed by Jerome. But I'm just going to cut to the chase here because during my research, whether I was, you know, reading different material, whether I was listening to other podcasts or whatever I was doing, there must have been about 20 to 30 paranormal stories with Jerome. So immediately, of course, I'm a history channel and I'll get questions on that as far as like haunted stories and stuff like that. And I always tell people, well, I'm not a paranormal channel and so forth, but Jerome's part of Jerome's history. Clearly, when you look at the tourism and the different like ghost tours and so forth that they have in town, there's an industry there. Is it haunted? Is Jerome haunted?
Well, I think most of the haunting in Jerome would have been in the hospital. And, you know, Phelps Dodge had kept that building with a good roof and good glass, and then they would put a caretaker in there, somebody who could live basically for free and was just keeping an eye on the place, keeping the heat in there. And when I was there, the story was that practically anybody that took that job ended up in a psych ward eventually. You know, there were strange noises, things would occur, and most people didn't say a whole lot. The truth was that the things that were going on in the hospital were probably related to all the mining accidents and things that were occurring at the time. There were dynamiting in the mine would cause rocks to shift. Houses were sliding a few inches a day downhill.
And the jail, right? Didn't the jail
sliding jail.
The sliding jail.
It's, yeah, it was, you could go to jail and get a free ride. But it was cast in concrete so that none of the joints were giving way. It was just heavier than the foundation. There was a lot of tailings and gravel, and every time they would send out a charge of dynamite, then that jail would shift a little bit. I'll tell you one thing is, if you go down in the mines, and that's not allowed, but people have, that's probably the creepiest place to be in all of Jerome. If you find an entrance and you're walking around in the rocky areas of the hills and creeks, there are places where mines jutted out, and a little ingenuity or effort, you might, people had said that, they had gone into the mines, and it's pretty creepy in there. It's
well, we know
very dangerous and probably haunted in the mines for sure.
You know, and the only reason why I'm touching on this, and I will always say this on anything, when I'm doing the history of ghost towns, and if there is a paranormal link or story to it, I'll tell it, even though I'm not, alluding to that stuff. So just so you know that I'm just making sure that, this is part of Jerome's history. And one of the things that you mentioned, Jim, you talked about the hospital. There were four hospitals. This was really cool in the history of Jerome. Like, wow, why so many hospitals? And really, Jim pretty much alluded to it when he was talking about the accidents and everything going on with the miners. They just needed that many hospital facilities. Now, one of them, the fourth one, was finally built. You look up on the hill and you'll see this huge structure that was the United Verde Hospital on Cleopatra Hill.
Yep.
It now is the Jerome Grand Hotel. That's what it became. So it started out as a hospital, then it turned into a hotel. And some of the hauntings and so forth and the stories that I've read kind of like allude to that. A lot of history, though.
You know, there's the mining equipment, like, for example, the Marion steam shovel, which was designed to dig the Panama Canal. It's huge. It runs on two separate sets of tracks, steam powered by two boilers. It's meant that, you had a couple of operators. You had two coal tenders. When they were blowing up all of this mountainside and shoveling it out, this thing had a 9-cubic-yard bucket, which is really big. And it struck an unexploded dynamite charge and blew it to smithereens. And everybody that was working on that machine at the time, they all died. And
just not the place you wanted to be in during that explosion.
Well, mining was very dangerous and still is. But at that time, we had track with ore cars. It was so easy for somebody to, lose control of a cart loaded with ore and it would roll down and smash somebody, take your toes off or whatever. And so people were getting hurt a lot.
Let's take a quick little coffee break. What do you say?
Rain in the shadow. In my head on my window pane, shadow. Don't you bother me anymore. Don't you darken up my door, shadow. Don't you follow me anymore. Slide, stay there on the floor.
All right, right back here at you. We'll get into a couple more stories and I'm going to have Jim tell those stories, actually, because they're going to be personalized. I want to hear more about his stories. But real quick, we talked about some hauntings, and I'm just going to touch on it. I'm not going to spend, obviously, very much more time on it because I want to talk about some other things, about the history of it being a ghost town, how this came about, and some big names. So Nora Butter Brown. And Jim, I'm going to bring you in on this one a little bit because you might not know. I was doing some research on her. And it's like, who is this? So she was the first madam. She was the first. So she opened up the first brothel there. And the story that intrigued me, and if you listen to the last podcast about Jerome, anyone that's listening right now, you will hear a narrated story that I tell, that I found, that tells a story about Billy the Kid meeting Wyatt Earp. Do you think that's possible? I mean, I was doing a lot of research trying to find if that was...
Well, there were famous people from history that happened through Jerome. Pancho Villa is one. He actually, in his younger days, he worked out of Jerome and was heading up a crew of donkeys that would go out into the wooded areas and bring back wood. And they would load these donkeys up with, you know, whatever they could break up into a usable size and just strap it onto these poor little animals and just bring it into town. And he had been involved in hauling water, which is where he was making a lot of his money, because, you know, Jerome didn't really have decent wells. And they had built huge flumes to bring the water in. So there were famous people there. But Husband's Alley, you know, is still there. And if you know what that is, it's just a place where there's nothing but a door and a staircase. And if you're out on the street, maybe you're getting ice cream for the kids, and they go in and you say, well, I'd rather not have any ice cream, thank you. And you slip through the Husband's Alley door and down a couple flights of stairs, and you're down in the cribs.
And specifically, you know, Husband's Alley, you said the cribs, the crib district, right? So that's kind of the historical name of that area. If you happen to get a chance to go and tour Jerome, and believe me, it's on my bucket list, okay? I'm going to go walk down Husband's Alley, right? And so there are some stories that are linked to that in terms of, you know, one of the prostitutes who was pretty famous at the time. She was beautiful. She was considered the most beautiful one. She was murdered.
Well, it was dangerous work.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at this.
Which is one of the reasons why, you know, these women would have a fellow who was hired to keep an eye on things. And if you weren't willing to pay for protection, you were on your own.
Well, get this. A prostitute would see 30 to 80 clients per day. And think about that for a second.
No, thank you.
Right? 30 to 80 clients per day. And, you know, this was a business for someone like Nora Butter Brown. And so this, you know, there was a ghost story that was long, that you could hear voices as you're walking down. Some people will be like, no, thank you, I don't want to go there. Well, you know, that's just, again, part of the history of that. There was another story. Headless Charlie was a famous story that I heard. He was a miner that got into a mining accident. They were able to recover his body, but it was headless. And of course, the ghost goes that he's consistently and constantly looking for his head, right? So that's a famous story, you know, that you might hear if you get a chance to go there as well. Jerome, it's a beautiful setting. It sits along the Mingus Mountains.
The Mingus Mountain Range. You know, the Cleopatra is said to be the oldest geological formation in the North American continent. And people go there to do research on its geology and have written many theses about the formation and, you know, for it to have that much copper. You know, the thing about Jerome was there's $1 billion worth of copper taken out. So all the platinum and silver and gold and manganese and everything else that came out was pure profit. There was the demand for copper suddenly ended, the price dropped, and as soon as the price dropped, then Phelps Dodge is looking for easier places to get the things that they can benefit from financially. They've got shareholders to take care of. So they pretty much shut it down overnight.
The end of Jerome. So let's go there, because this goes right into why we even have this on this podcast to begin with, right? So
what made a ghost town?
It made a ghost town. What happened? So 1953 is what you're talking about. The mines close, right? They extracted between 1876 and 1953 approximately 33 million tons of silver, copper, zinc, lead ore, and gold. Of course, there's all mixed together. And they said that the mines were the total worth of about $1 billion. Unbelievable. So they did. At those prices. I mean, so they brought in a lot of money. So all of a sudden, the ore starts to run out. They close the mine. It's done. So 1953, imagine what happens. Now you have what we call a ghost town event. Fewer than 100 by the mid-50s. So now you're seeing it, you know, diminish. And this is interesting, because today Jerome has.
We had 450 when I was there in the 80s. And I would imagine it's a good 600, 700 inhabitants by now.
So anywhere from 450 to about 500, right? So they definitely had a resurgence. But when you look at that compared to the 15,000, you could technically say that that still is a ghost town. Now, here's what happened, and I definitely want to hear your story on this as well. The societies and the businesses in town got together, and they really came up with a great marketing plan and said, we got to do something. So they really titled themselves, they embraced it really and said, okay, we are the largest ghost town in America. That found that pretty interesting. So because some people will hear this and say, that's not a ghost town. A ghost town's got to be population zero. And that's not always the case. I call them living ghost towns. This is a perfect example. This is a historic living ghost town and they embrace it. So tell me some stories about Jerome.
Well, I think as far as, you know, your ghost town designation goes, you know, when you have more people in the cemetery than you have living in the structures, you know, that is when you probably, you know, are a ghost town. And, you know, it also means that you've got to have a number of empty buildings.
Well, think of all the tourism there. And that's where I was really originally when I said, I'll come back to this exactly what I was saying. Some people are saying, well, you know, one reason why they're probably doing ghost tours is that people are intrigued. They've got, you know, some serious questions and they want to go check it out. It's mysterious. They want to go see it. Secondly, they're intrigued with the fact that they call it the world's largest ghost town. What does that mean? Ghost towns, stories that go, the Wild West, everything with it. So tourism is a big deal in Jerome.
Well, the thing of it is that people want a unique experience. When you go to some place where everything is designed to work like, you know, like a functioning machine, like Disneyland, for example, that is a whole different experience. You go to Oatman, you go to some of these, you know, actual ghost towns where, you know, practically everybody left. You know, you're seeing things that were abandoned. And that's what Jerome had to offer. And, you know, as far as a business community, it can only supply the needs of so many business concerns, unlike its beginning. It had a JCPenney, you know?
Oh, and yeah. So JCPenney, there's a story in itself, right?
Well, I remember it was sliding along with the jail. It was sliding down. You had to walk across an 8-foot gap on planks to get in and out the front door. It had skidded so far.
Well, so I grew up in Cherokee. We had a JCPenney's downtown Main Street, Cherokee, anywhere from 4,000 to 8,000. You know, people, you're like, what? I thought JCPenney's were only in malls, right? Yep. And now malls are almost becoming a thing of the past.
You know, there was a miniature golf course in Jerome. The Dinky Links. I mean, when you go back and you look at the old pictures and everything that was involved, you know, there was some pretty substantial churches at one time. And, you know, Holy Family there. I had two children that were born in Jerome, and they were both baptized at the Catholic Church. Even though it wasn't functioning, we had to have a visiting priest that would come and say Mass once a month. And he would do this on his own dime. But, you know, it's definitely, when you have a full church with no priest, you know, that qualifies as one element of a ghost town. I mean, those are just the things that...
How about a post office?
Right. Yeah.
I think I heard a story once saying, you know, if you want to look at a ghost town and see some stages that might cause it to be going into ghost town state, one of them is if you lose your school. Another one is if you lose your post office.
No longer have a jail.
You know, right? So common things, and all of a sudden you're like, that might be going into ghost town state. So, and this is the commonality today. This is modern ghost towns that exist. You move to Jerome. You were part of what I call the artist movement, right? So you were a woodworker, and you built a house in Jerome. Tell me about that.
Well, there was a guy there, Don Robertson. He had a sawmill. You know, he was kind of on the fringes of things, and, you know, he liked to do things his own way. He was outside the city limits.
I think one of the cool things about heading down to the southwest part of the country with ghost towns, in the Midwest, we a lot of times lose our towns. And so you say, here's the ghost town of, you know, Ruble, right? I shouldn't use Ruble. Ruble has a couple standing buildings yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, some areas, don't have anything left. And so you go out, you go there and you see a cornfield and somebody's like,
yep.
Big deal. It's like, well, this is a reality.
This was the middle of town.
Yeah, this is the reality of what ghost towns sometimes usually yeah. become in the Midwest, more often than not, because the land is more valuable than anything else standing, so they'll raise that property, and so you have a field. Or the only thing left is a cemetery, and that's pretty common. Head down the southwest, and even in the mountain states, a lot of these towns are preserved, right, because the weather is drier
yep.
and so forth. So that's something to kind of think about. Jerome is not the only ghost town in Arizona. There's some really cool ones. Ruby is another one. There's some yep. really good ones. But again, the whole fact that the marketing, and I say marketing because that was really part of it. They had to come up with a way to survive. And so the town members who were left are like, we got to market this as something. So we're going to embrace the fact that we are a ghost town now, or at least becoming one. And let's market ourselves as the oldest ghost town in America. So I thought that was genius on their part because people are intrigued by that. And I also think hearing from other people that they thought that because there's literally thousands of different ghost stories, that some of them might be not necessarily truthful. Some of them might be stretched out a little bit to add to that marketing.
Well, you know, ghost towns represent opportunity. And part of that opportunity really exists in places like the desert.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody is really scrapping for that land, and that's why these places are there. Nobody has bothered to come in and shape it up and live in there, unlike Jerome, which had a lot of brick buildings and substantial architecture that would withstand time. It retains that mystique. The ghosts are still there. The architecture is still there. The vistas, you know, the natural beauty. And so, you know,
the architecture, the old buildings are still there. And interesting that you even brought
mines
that.
Are still
the
there.
Mines are still there.
They're still getting gold out.
they're still there. Yep. And you brought up the fact these brick buildings. And I thought this is a perfect time to bring up something that I read. I thought, well, that's really interesting. Jerome seemed to be under fire quite a bit. And when I say under fire, I mean fire it after burned. Fire after fire.
It burned a couple times.
Yes.
The firehouse burned down.
And so when you go back in history and you read these stories about the fires that happened in Jerome, I mean, there's a couple times where, like, people in Phoenix are like, good, glad that wickedest town in the West burned down. You know, but the people and the resilience of that town were like, we're going to rebuild.
Yep.
And every time they rebuilt, and finally got to the point where, like, all right, we're sick and tired of this town burning down. So we're going to fireproof it.
Yep.
And so they did, and they started making things out of brick instead of the woods. Some of the frames, I heard they started to use concrete.
Yeah, they're pouring concrete, you know, at that time, you know, formed concrete was kind of a new thing. And, you know, Phelps Dodge Mansion was formed concrete, and it's a beautiful structure. They made really good Portland concrete back then. And when you go through there, it's amazing the finish work that those guys were doing. But they were using a lot of concrete in around the mine and some of the buildings. And, you know, it was something that really made a big difference under those circumstances.
I even heard some of the, because of the amount of explosions that were happening because of the amount of mining underneath them, that they would even become like almost like earthquake, you know, not resistance, you can't totally resist it, but to withstand some of the explosions.
Well, if you can imagine, you know, maybe a dozen heavy blasts per day, just a phenomenal amount of disruption of your lifestyle, because it's going to shake things.
Yeah, definitely.
It's going to be loud. It's going to wake the baby. But yeah.
So some of the structures that they built, you know, including, you know, the hospital, mm-hmm. like I said before, which became the hotel. Absolutely. So they did think about that. They thought, well, we want to make sure we're fireproof. We want to make sure that we're earthquake resistant because of all these explosions. And so that was part of the history.
Well, there were tailings everywhere. And people were buying building lots. In fact, you know, when I built my house, it was on a tailing pile because that's what there was. And people were just, they were, in order to dig out 88 miles of tunnels, you got to chuck some rock somewhere.
It's got to go somewhere.
90% of it, you know, for certain is not going to go out of town on the train cars.
Thankful for Jim giving us this interview today. And again, we're just kind of focusing on the ghost town of Jerome, Arizona. And like we always say on this channel, let's keep history alive. This is Midwest Ghost Town.